Live and in color from the NBC News Radio Broadcasting Studios of KCAA, 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM, located in beautiful Southern California, and in parallel from the Turf's Up Radio Studio in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Thanks for tuning into the Water Zone Show this evening.
And a pleasant good evening, and welcome to everybody to the Water Zone. And I'm Rob Starr, along with my esteemed colleague, Mr. Chris Dady. Chris, how are you doing?
Great. Thank you very much, Robert. I hope you're the same out there in AZ.
Yes, I am. And just for our listeners to know, if they want to call in and speak to any of us and our special guests, please call 888-909-1050, or if you're local in California, 909-792-5222. We're very excited. And Chris, I know you're going to be on CBS Television 2 in Los Angeles this weekend.
Absolutely right, man. On Saturday, that's November 7th, 9 a.m. on PBS, which is the KLCS TV, Channel 58, if you're local. Also on Facebook Live, so you just look at facebook.com, Things Green. That's the name of the show that we'll be on, Things Green. All one string, THIN. G-S-D-R-E-E-N, and on YouTube Live, also on Things Green. Look them both up. We'll be on TV.
And why don't you tell our, I told our listeners before, but why don't you remind them why you're going to be special?
Thanks, Rob. So I have been very gratefully and thankfully and respectfully inducted into the Green Industry Hall of Fame in the class of 2020.
Yay!
Yeah, I like that. If I was in the studio, I'd do the applause thing, but I'm not in the studio, so I can't do that.
Thanks very much, Rob.
As I told you, you're a good coworker, a good team member, a great peer, a good friend, and you totally earned it and deserved it over your career, and we appreciate that. And we also have tonight some guests coming on after we bring in Ms. Chris Austin, two gentlemen who also were inducted into the Green Industry Hall of Fame this year. And they'll be on the show tonight to talk about their history and how they got into business and such. It's a pretty good story. So anyway, Chris, again, as my friend and co-host and everything else, congratulations again.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. So time to bring in one of our special guests also. Our name is Ms. Chris Austin, who is the purveyor of Maven's Notebook. It's the best place to get California water news. We get it every single day. You can go to her website, www.mavensnotebook.com. Become a sponsor. Become a subscriber. It's a great thing, and you'll know as much as we do. But we probably won't know as much as her. But Chris is a great person to bring in the news. So Chris, welcome.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
We're fine here. Everybody, just to remind everybody, we are not broadcasting in the studio at NBC's. We're all doing the remote, keeping COVID safe kind of thing. And so if we step on each other accidentally when we're trying to talk, please excuse us for that. We don't mean to do that, but we can't see each other, so it's a little hard to know when somebody's making a gesture to talk or not. So, Chris, we got a bunch of news today. I was reading your stuff this morning, which I do every single morning because it comes to my computer. But one of the things that of interest was this California water PFAS lawsuit.
PFAS.
And we talked a lot about that.
That's right up here in my neck of the woods, here in Santa Clarita. They filed the lawsuit against the makers of PFAS, you know, which for contamination. And, you know, out here in Santa Clarita, Santa Clarita is a little newer Southern California community, and before it became this community, they had some munitions plants here and other things. So there is a legacy of some environmental issues, contamination issues that have to be cleaned up, and PFAS is one of them. Now, you know, PFAS is a very broad set of chemicals. It was in Teflon. Remember when we had Teflon? They took Teflon off the market. What was really interesting is they had done a test, and they had tested, you know, people's blood to see if they had any, what chemicals they had in it. And they found, I believe this was like back in the 1970s. I'm not sure. But they did these tests, and they found an amazing amount of this chemical in the majority, the vast majority. I believe it was up in the 80 to 90% of people. They found this chemical in their blood. So that's why Teflon was taken off the market. But there's a whole bunch of other chemicals that are very similar. And this is the problem that we have. We identify a chemical such as that which is in Teflon, and we say, that's a bad chemical. We're going to regulate that. And then they can go out and they can manufacture a very similar chemical, but is not that exact chemical. And so really when we're talking about PFAS, it's really a class of about 4,000 different chemical substances. And these are substances that were used for so many things. Firefighting foam. So, you know, when they're doing, we have a fire at the airport, they bring out the foam. It's a chemical in fabric softeners. It's a fire retardant. So it was in put into couches and chairs and upholstery and children.
Oh, baby clothes.
Sleepwear.
Baby clothes. Yeah.
Children's sleepwear because, you know, they didn't want, you know, the sleepwear babies to catch on fire. But the thing is, you know, all these chemicals, you know, you sit on the couch with the fire retardant, and those chemicals, you know, soak into your skin, and that eventually gets into your body. And they have found that, and they're also in fast food wrapping. When you get the paper that has the sort of sheath on it that makes it the grease not seep through, that's PFAS on those, you know, materials. I mean, they're everywhere. And they're everywhere in the products that we use. They're also everywhere in the environment. I mean, all over. You couldn't avoid them even if you knew what to avoid, because if you knew what to avoid, you'd have to avoid, like, everything.
I mean, That worked for gangsters too.
Yeah.
Well, no, yeah, Gotti, he was the Teflon Don. They put him away.
Yeah, you know, I unfortunately fear that it's just the beginning, because, you know, we're very good. Our capability to test and to see what's out there in our environment has really increased, and there are so many chemicals that, you know, we spray out there into the environment, and that, you know, everything goes somewhere. And, you know, so I just want to say, since, you know, this is a program, you know, that appeals to homeowners, you know, as well, is, you know, you want to look at the direction on your fertilizers and your pesticides. And you need to follow those directions. And sometimes I think in America we have this idea, well, if some is good, more is better, right? But when you over-apply fertilizers and over-apply pesticides, and then you irrigate, and if you're irrigating and you have runoff, that runoff from your property is taking the excess fertilizers and the excess pesticides. And those get into our waterways, and they just don't go away. So it's really important, I think, you know, as a homeowner, when you are using these things, to follow the directions, because they're there for a purpose, you know. So peel back that little flap and you know, try to apply it at the correct amount. So.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, Mr. Davies, I was disappointed because I made a bad joke. I thought you would do something, you know, with the drum roll or something, but I guess I should never tell jokes anymore. I thought the Teflon Don and John Gotti was a good thing, but what do I know? I'll just keep my day job. I won't be a comedian.
I heard it well. It was like water off a duck's back.
Yeah. I can't make you guys laugh. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
But
I'm anyway, very
so Chris, where do you think it's going to head with the suit?
Well, I think it's the first of an onslaught, because the problem with contamination is it's very expensive to clean up. And if you have a contaminated aquifer and there's a lot of PFAS in certain aquifers, especially throughout Southern California and elsewhere, especially around military installations, taking that out is an inexpensive process. This is why it's so important to prevent contamination from happening in the first place, because once an aquifer is contaminated, it is very expensive to clean up. And, you know, they've said that it doesn't take very much motor oil into an aquifer to contaminate it. And, you know, so when you used to think about people that change their oil and then they would take it out into the dirt and dump it into the dirt, well, you know, it doesn't go away. It goes into the aquifer and it spreads. It doesn't stay in one place. It spreads because groundwater moves. And so, you know, it's very important to protect the groundwater from being contaminated in the first place, because when it is contaminated, then your water district has to apply special wellhead treatment or other things in the process, and they have no choice but to pass that on to the ratepayers. And so, of course, when they're faced with these cleanup costs, they're trying to, you know, collect from the person who caused this contamination in the first place. So it's going to be the first of what I think is going to be an onslaught of court cases over this contamination. And we'll see where it goes. I worry that it's only the first of, you know, several chemicals we're going to find that are all over every place. So, as a result of, you know, our lifestyle. But at any rate, you know, again, I'll go back just to say it one more time. You know, as a homeowner, follow those directions. Do not over-apply, because there are consequences for that. So,
good advice.
Yeah, and, you know, I remember when I was way long time ago when I was single and lived in an apartment, I first moved out, and people in the apartment would change oils on their car, and then they just throw the empty oil into the trash can so it doesn't get properly disposed. And, you know, I'm sure that all goes to a dump and goes down into the ground, and we got a problem.
Yeah, there's the saying that, you know, no single raindrop thinks it's responsible for the flood. You know, you can't go around thinking, well, okay, everyone else is doing the right thing, so I'm going to do the wrong thing, and it's not going to be a big deal. Because, it just doesn't work that way. If you're driving a really dirty car that's spewing out a lot of, you know, bad stuff into the air, you can't say, well, everybody else is driving a clean car, so I can afford to drive a not clean car. I mean, you know, every raindrop thinks it's not responsible for the flood, but there's a lot of those raindrops out there, and so, you know, we all need to take care and take responsibility for, you know, the things that we want to get rid of, be it, or you know, like I said, going back, applying stuff on your lawn. Follow the directions. They're there for a purpose.
Oh, yeah, absolutely right. I also read that you did a story about the proposed cost of the California Delta Tunnel and how it threatens SoCal's water future. Maybe in a form of this.
It's a very common argument from people that oppose the Delta Tunnels. You know, they're saying that if Metropolitan Water District buys into the tunnels, that's money that's not going for regional, you know, self-reliant projects. I guess in a sense there's a shred of truth to that. But You know, it's individual agencies. You know, Metropolitan is an importer of water to Southern California, and they have 26 member agencies. And for a lot of those agencies, Metropolitan is not their only source of water, but for some of them, it is. You know, other agencies have access to groundwater. Some have access to surface water from the San Gabriel Mountains or other places. I mean, there are some of those things around there. Some have access to the Colorado River Aqueduct. You know, Metropolitan supplies, they have a really great system, but it doesn't put water. They can't take water from the Colorado River Aqueduct, for instance, and deliver it up to Ventura. Ventura, you know, their service area is sort of segregated out a little bit. You know, the northern service area, Metropolitan, gets State Water Project, and the southern areas get the Colorado River Aqueduct. And so they can't just, you know, it's hard. It's hard to say, you know, but these are all individual agencies having to make their own individual decisions about the projects that they want to build, in addition to that which Metropolitan does. So, I mean, it's an argument, but the hard part about this argument is that, you know, water from the Delta supplies 30% of Southern California's water. And the people that don't want to see anything further done to the Delta will say that, you know, we can do without this, that if we conserved water, if we did other things, we would need the water from the Delta. But I'm not sure that the numbers pencil out that way. You know, and the Colorado River Aqueduct, I mean, Southern California has pressure on the Colorado River Aqueduct supplies and the Delta water supplies. And while we have groundwater that's in pretty good shape, there are areas where there is contamination and that has to be addressed. They can't pump groundwater from those areas. But all that being said, in Southern California, I will say Metropolitan going into this year, which could be a dry year, according to scientists, Metropolitan actually has a record amount of water in storage. Southern California is well positioned.
I remember a couple of years I went to a stakeholder meeting with Metropolitan, and they were talking about making an investment in the Delta, and that they'd have to pass on some of the cost to the people who use their water. And so I asked the question, I said, well, I'm already paying money through my taxes to the state, and so now you're going to charge me another fee on top of my water bill. So I'm like getting double taxed for the thing. But they said, well, we're not getting any money from the other side, so we have to do it some way. And, you know, it's like no matter what you do, the ratepayers are going to lose some of those things. Yes, we got to pay. We have to contribute something. But
when you look at it from a holistic view, in the state of California, everybody's water future is, you know, up in the air, and everybody's water future, whether it's the Bay Area, the Central Valley, Southern California, there's going to be additional costs to maintain our water infrastructure, right? So what the state does to mitigate or fairly, you know, dole out those costs, it's going to affect everybody. But as Chris said, it's not just the Delta water tunnels, but it's also groundwater. It's also what we can do on water conservation. It's a lot of things, right, Chris? Not just one.
Oh yes, and you know one thing, you know, that people in Southern California need to be aware of, I think, is unfortunately, yes, your water bills going to rise, but I mean there is water shipped down from Northern California that is flung over the Tehachapis in the largest water lift in the world, which takes lot of electricity to power. I mean, this water that comes to us from Northern California, it does not come free. And, yes, the Bay Delta, you know, the people in the Bay Area, they get water from the Delta, but they're not flinging it over a mountain range. Yes, they have costs involved with that, and, yes, that has an impact on the Delta. But I think people in Southern California do need to be aware your water comes from very far places, and it costs money to deliver it here. I mean, it costs money to deliver the Colorado River aqueduct supplies. In part, that's why the power contracts from Hoover Dam are so important, because Metropolitan buys into those contracts so they can offset the cost of delivering Colorado River aqueduct water into Southern California. It has to go over a number of places. They have a number of pumps that have to lift it over mountains, and that it takes energy, and that costs money. And transportation costs for that water, you know, are passed on to consumers. But, you know, water rate payers in Southern California do need to be aware that this water that comes to us, which supplies about 60% of Southern California's water supplies, are going to get more expensive because there's, you know, all these areas are getting stressed. And, yeah, you know, there's a lot of impact to these things that are going on. I don't think we can, you know, really look at this and say we're going to be paying the same. I think in a way, given, you know, well, I don't know. I will just say
water is cheap. And I don't, you know, to finish my point before, I don't mind paying more money for getting the water and doing the infrastructure. What I'm opposed to, where they spend money in California for the train, you know, their bullet train that's going nowhere, and, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars and things of that, and a lot of wasteful other things where they're not managing their budget and the programs that they got. Because I think water should be in the top three issues that California has. And you've heard me speak on that before. Again, I don't mind paying a fair share for water, and it's ridiculously cheap water. So, yes, I have no problems contributing to that. And even if Metropolitan is going to charge me this extra fee and the state's paying my, you know, I'm paying my taxes. But the money that I get for my taxes is going to a lot of programs, which is just wasteful of money. And yeah, and that's what burns most of the people in California. You know, they pay and pay and pay, yet nothing ever gets finished. Just like the roads, all the bad roads with the potholes and everything else. We've been talking about that, you know, since I've been in California for 30-something years, and I don't see a change in that. Anyway, but I just wanted to make that last point in what I meant by, you know, paying twice.
Well, and the interesting thing is, you know, the one thing I think that the Newsom administration has taken on is, and really wholeheartedly, is the issue of contaminated drinking water in the Central Valley. They made this important push. They got legislation passed, and they're now implementing this program that is really hopefully going to deliver clean water to the people that, like, need it the most. There's a lot of complications to it, but, you know, I will say Newsom took this on, and I kind of think he took it on. I'm just guessing here, but I think he saw this as a problem he could solve.
Well, I hope so. Mr. Davies, you had a question?
No, I was going to, you know, I was just going to see if I could get one more minute of Chris's time before we go to commercial break, because, you know, Chris, I'm a, you know, river and fisheries guy, right? So just kind of, is any update this week on the river restoration program for the San Joaquin?
Yeah, you don't hear about it much, but they had an item on it, the Central Valley Flood Protection Program, a flood protection board. And, you know, they're really working on restoring this river. They've had a lot of success. They have had salmon spawning in the river, and these salmon have returned 3 years later. You know, again, just so people know, the salmon lay their while. They head out to the ocean. They're out there for 2 to 3 years, and then they return to spawn again in the river, sometimes in the very spot that they were born. It's really a miracle. So they've been trying to restore these salmon runs to the San Joaquin River, and they're having they have had some actually kind of amazing success in, you know, they found some eggs. They chose eggs specifically. They planted them there, those, and 3 years later, some of those fish returned. The big issue was fish passage through the San Joaquin River and other areas, because the San Joaquin River, once they built the Fryant Dam in 1942, stretches of it went dry. When it went dry, you know, there's actually at some point, it, you know, there is a whole subdivision of homes that are built in what used to be the riverbed. So they've been trying to figure out how to get salmon around these different barriers, and they've made a lot of progress. They don't have as much money as they were hoping they would have in the beginning, but they've really made a lot of progress. So it's a good thing.
Okay, great. Well, we got to take a little break here for our commercials, and then we can come back with our other special guests that we have online. So, Chris, thank you as always. Again, people, go to www.mavisnotebook.com, become a subscriber, sponsor, and you get the most updated news and water that you ever want. So, Chris, thank you very much for joining us. Stay safe from COVID-19, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Take care, guys.
Have a great week, Chris.
You too. Bye-bye.
We'll be back in just a minute with our next guest, so stick around for the second half of the...
KCAA Loma Linda, 1050 AM, K292 FQ Riverside, and K293 CF Moreno Valley.
If you knew there was a pipe cement that works better than the one you're currently using, is better for you and the environment, and costs the same or less, would you buy it? Well, no-brainer, right? Weldon, the trusted leader in solvent cements for over 60 years, is pleased to introduce a new line of solvent cements that does all that. Introducing the Eco Series line of solvent cements for PVC piping systems. Not only does it work great and set fast, it also has 30% lower solvent emissions and less smelly fumes. A better workplace environment when you're installing pipes. But don't just take our word for it. EcoSeries products are the only solvent cements that are Green Seal certified for environmental innovation for effective performance, improved working conditions, and for use with potable water. Now available in a medium-bodied fast-setting blue formula, 905 Eco, and a regular-bodied fast-setting clear formula, 900 Eco. Pick up a can today from your local distributor and see, smell, and feel the difference, just like Joe Sweat, president of Sunrise Irrigation, did. He said, after using Weldon's 905 Eco, we immediately noticed the application was smooth and there was noticeably less odor than other blue solvent cements on the market. The guys love it. To learn more about Eco solvent cements from Weldon, visit the website at www.weldon.com or call the technical service hotline at 877-477-8327. That's 877-477-8327.
It's almost sweater weather. The busy season's winding down, and so is your inventory. But no worries, you can wait until the spring to start back up. Well, put down that pumpkin spice latte and ask yourself. Do bears hibernate on an empty stomach? You're not careful. Out of stock can turn into out of business fast. So stay a step ahead. Load up in the fall and winter to avoid product shortages in the spring. Even better, use an early order program to get your inventory game on point. Save big in the process. While you're at it, stock up on products like Lesco seed and fertilizer that can be used in multiple seasons, not just one. You'll save money, and you'll have plenty of opportunities to use the product throughout the year. Freaked out by the idea of loading up on supplies during your slow season? Don't be. A good early order program will give you extended payment terms to help you manage your cash flow. So today's lesson, order early to stay ahead and save big.
Welcome back to the second half of the Water Zone with Rob and Chris, and we're hoping you're enjoying the show. We have some special guests. I know at the beginning of the show, I was mentioning that Chris Davey was inducted into the Green Industry Hall of Fame. And we have two special people on the line, hopefully, that have also been inducted recently. And they're going to be on Channel 2 this weekend. And it's Don and Dave Hendrickson. And they're known as the Hendrickson Brothers. So, gentlemen, how are you this evening?
I'm great, Rob. How are you?
Yeah,
we're
doing
great.
Just fine, Rob.
Good. I miss you guys. But, you know, I'm sure you're doing the same thing I am. I don't go into the office every single day because of COVID situation, trying to be careful. And I know you guys are doing the same thing. But you guys have been, just so that our audience knows, you guys have been dear friends, great business partners with us and our company, and just heck of a nice guys. And I couldn't be more happier for you guys getting into that. And the award, you certainly earned it over the years, and you certainly deserve it. So I know Chris will say the same thing, and we're very excited to have you on the show.
Absolutely,
I know you guys...
man. Great to have another 2020 Green Industry Hall of Fame alumni on the show tonight, especially you guys, Dave and Don Hendrickson at Hendrickson Brothers, celebrating this year in 2020, 50 years in business, yeah?
Yes, right.
Yeah, it's right. Been a long time, I tell you.
Well, I thought you guys were like 29.
Well,
you look young.
That's what we tell everybody else, Rob.
So, for our listeners, and for me, how did you guys get into the business of irrigation? We'll start with that, or at the industry, and then move on into your business and then the product things. But what made you go, when did you learn or want to know that you wanted to be in this industry?
Well, you know, Rob, it was, you know, my dad was very inventive. And, you know, he was in the agriculture business and in the pest control business. And he would change with the up-and-coming law changes and stuff like that. And so he had to build new equipment and ongoing stuff. And we farmed stuff in higher elevations. And like Chris said earlier, the cost of the water was just outrageous to pump. The electricity to pump the water was just out of this world. And we could kind of see the handwriting on the wall. And the biggest thing right then was the fact that we could maybe drip irrigation was just now coming on the market. And so we decided to get in and try to convert some of these groves to drip irrigation and save them 2 or 3 acre feet per year. And Don, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, we invented a system of punching emitters into tubing, and we would roll out a roll 1,000 feet down the roll, just one row of hose, and an emitter every 4 feet, and that was enough to water those trees that had been watered for years with furrows, and save probably at least 30% of the water. So
wow.
That was a good start.
And what area did you start in? I mean, was it in California or somewhere else? Or
geographically, yeah.
It was Southern California, a lot of it in Corona.
I was born in Riverside, and it was Riverside, Corona, Riverside was the main area that we sold into San Diego, generally in Riverside and Javelin Hills, Woodcrest, in that area up there, as we got into it, then we decided that we better get a store started. We could start a store and sell trees and small avocado trees to the homeowners and fertilizer and some weed killers. And then drip, as you say, was just coming on the market. And so we started handling drip and buying polyethylene hose and selling it by the thousand of feet to the homeowners and the citrus groves.
The facility that you have in Corona, is that the original site that you started on with the store?
Yeah. Don, why don't you tell them the history of that?
Yeah, that course, that's an old mule barn, which was built back in 1905. But, yeah, we converted it to a store there, and that was the – it's still the same area that we have today for selling to the growers and the contractors. Of course, the growers are gone, but now we have mow and go guys and homeowners that are buying stuff mm-hmm. from us. So.
Wow. That's good.
So you got to realize that Corona, you remember, was the Circle City, and all the houses basically were in the side of that city, and all the orange groves were on the outside, and with the Lemon Exchange and the Foothill Lemon Company and the big growers, and we were up there in the plantation, and they had a pumping plant right there to pump the water up the hill to the other. The Crown Ranch and stuff like that, and basically the road we were on was just really amazing. The Chase Drive was a real big through affair, and Ontario was the only way to San Diego.
Yeah, hey Dave and Don, somebody who grew up in Southern California and was here in the 1970s, you know, going to Corona was going to the country, right? I mean, you know.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
There wasn't much out there, right? Except groves and some farmland. So I remember that well. So just for our listeners, I mean, you've expanded a lot since then. So before we start talking about some of the products, agriculture is not the only segment of the industry you're in these days. I mean, you've broadened to commercial, landscape, residential, on all that kind of stuff. Kind of. You know, when did all that happen? Did it happen all at once, or, you know, kind of did you branch into those other areas along the way?
Well, the way I kind of remember was that we were selling mostly ag equipment, and then for some reason we had, I don't know, a lot of rain or whatever. We weren't able to sell very much for a couple of years, and so we decided we better take our products and show them to the landscape people. So we started going to the shows and talking to landscape people and trying to get into that business. And we got in there little by little, but now it seems like it's catching on more. After 15 years, we finally get a break.
So anyway, my dad was pretty inventive. And right back then, at the time we were opening that store, he went into his lab there and punched a hole in a rubber stopper that was a stopper to a medical tube, and then he stuck it in a half-inch pipe and put some water on it, and it controlled the water. And so then he started making flow controls out of that experiment, and so then that's when we started making flow controls and regulators and other things to go down the road.
Yeah, you guys are really ingenious about all the products that you've done. I was amazed when I first met you guys. And you know, it's always interesting. I always think that people and families down the road don't get along with each other, but you guys are just great. I mean, you're like the yin and yang. I mean, you guys complement each other on what you do and work and such stuff. But the products you've come up with over the years, I mean, tell our listeners some of the products that you guys make.
Well, we have a line of pressure regulators. We first made a drip irrigation kit, and so we developed a pressure regulator for that. And then after a while, the kit didn't work, but we were still selling the regulators to other people that were making kits. So we then developed other versions of it, maybe put a diaphragm in it instead of a piston kind of a thing. And we've made some bubblers and pressure compensating screens and stuff. But we've developed all kinds of different aspects of the products that we had, flow controls or pressure regulators.
Yeah. And what I find unbelievable is the speed that you guys could do that. You know, you don't have, I mean, you're not a, a $10 billion company, but you guys can invent stuff and just do it right there in your lab and get it done. And in a matter of days, I mean, you got a product that you can test, which is amazing to me. And I think that's good. I mean, and you still keep on doing it every single day. And that blows me away that, you know, you guys have the passion and you're dedicated to the industry. And that's part of the reason you got inducted into the Green Industry Hall of Fame. You just never stopped, you know, you didn't just say, oh, okay, I'm just going to do this and go into the office every day. You got the passion, the fire in the belly. You're doing something. You're making contributions every day to the industry, which is unbelievable.
Yeah, we kind of lucked out there with my dad. He was a very, very good friend of Glenn Grizzle. And Glenn helped him develop some mold and stuff like this. A very smart man. And he was helping us. In fact, he helped us get my dad the first molding machine he had. They were really pretty rough, manual operating type injection molding machines, and they were tough to run. but that's how we started. And then we kept the building molds. And if you have the right people, you don't have to go through all the rigmarole of other companies have to go through. You can just
bureaucracy.
Have an idea, put it on a piece of paper, and go for it.
Hey, so Dave or Don, either of you, I'm really interested in going back a little bit. You know, when your dad was tinkering in the back there and being innovative. I'm sure when I was younger and driving through the streets of Corona, mainly because my girlfriend lived there, I drove.
Yep.
At the store, right, or your place on Rimpa there. You know, what were some of the early innovations that you remember that have sort of taken the company to where it is today?
Well, I would say it would probably be the flow control was the very first thing that we developed, and it was a tough sell. We kind of pretty much had to install it and say, hey, you know, take a look at this, look at your meter and see if it isn't working, because they wouldn't believe that it would really work. And when we would show it at shows and things, we would have a sprinkler running there, and everybody thought we were selling sprinklers, but we finally kept making it and put it out there, and then eventually we kind of changed over to making pressure regulators as well. So we still sell quite a few flow controls today. And the pressure regulators, of course, we've gone up to 1 inch, and we have some pretty good models there on that take care of different flows for ag and landscape.
Yeah. So you've been obviously in the business for a couple of years. Where do you think the future of irrigation is going? You had to take a look in your crystal ball, and you know you're going to go another 50 years doing this thing. Where do you think it's going to happen? What's going to be different, or is it going to be different?
Well, I always go out to my dad, and I'd tell him my plans and my financial dreams and stuff like this, and he says, "Well, Dave, things change." And he's right. And the irrigation industry, you know, when we were in agriculture, we were surrounded by orange groves. But now there isn't maybe 5 to 6 acres left in Corona of citrus or avocado groves. And so everything has, you know, gone urban. And the future, you know, I don't think the lawns are getting smaller. The native plants with low water use are becoming popular. There's a huge amount of apartment buildings being done, and so it's going to be strictly kind of a landscape type of a irrigation system with probably very, very big valves to do, you know, a whole apartment complex at one time. And And so and I don't think the homeowners are going to like their water bills in the future. And so they're going to go. In fact, we're right now, I think we're very, very busy. And maybe only because of the coronavirus is because of people planting gardens and small stuff for food and like that. But what you think of the agriculture up north and the problems with the water up there, I don't know if, they're even cut back. They're even told to cut about so many acres a year they can't grow. So it's going to be strictly a drip irrigation type thing, and I think it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
In your
view over your careers, what do you think up to date today? What would you, either one of you guess or say that you believe is like one of the best innovation in irrigation that you've seen over 50 years?
Oh, boy.
I mean, there's a lot, but what do you think is...
Yeah, there is a lot. And I really think, the advancement of the emitter hose, and I think is a good thing. And that's a pretty good, and having it so it doesn't have the root growth going to plug up the emitters. That's fabulous.
Underground irrigation for lawns.
That's pretty good too.
Golf course is looking at the underground irrigation, like on the greens and things, which I think is a great idea.
Yeah. The golf courses use so much, and the golf courses are very valuable to the community for recreation and stuff like that. And it's like you got to keep them green, or people aren't going to play them.
So that's right.
We got to find ways to. And they use an awful lot of water too. So we got to find ways to cut that back and keep them green.
So here's an interesting segue on that to ask another question in a different way. With all the trends we see today in water conservation, especially here in California, with the EPA water sense and the California Energy Commission, the CEC requirements in the state of California for pressure regulation on spray heads. How do you see that affecting your business?
Well, I think it's, when we first developed the flow controls and pressure regulators, we knew at that time, and that was back 35 years ago, and we knew that we could save 20-30%. But at that time, people didn't really care. The villas cut their bait valve down about halfway. But I think that's a really good thing. If you're going to conserve this water, that's going to conserve an awful lot of water. You put a check valve out there in regulation, and it'll save you 30%.
Yep, high-efficiency nozzles, another great... A feature that people are now becoming more and more used to, right? I mean, this is not your father's Oldsmobile anymore, so to speak, right? To use that old phrase in terms of irrigation these days. So you also have some other products in your product line, right? Not just pressure regulators and drip and flow controls that we've talked about, but you have some sprinklers and accessories. Tell us a little bit about those.
Well, we have Don. You want to talk about those?
I'm just trying to think. Well, we have it's kind of a pressure regulator, but we have a drip irrigation manifold. So it's a screws onto a half inch riser, and it's got 9 outlets for drip irrigation, and each outlet can be controlled or shut off. And so it's real easy to convert a flower bed or something like that to drip. Just unscrewing your sprinkler and screw on this head, and it's got a filter in it, pressure regulator, and a place.
What's it about 25 psi? Or
that's right.
Yeah,
set at 25 psi.
And then we've also developed the what we call it, the their regulator checks, and an N1 regulator, you get a check valve and a regulation. And so this thing, and it's very nice. It operates nice. It pops on and off. And if you put it underneath the sprinkler, it's really fun to watch them because they don't pop on until you have about maybe 25, 30 pounds. And when it does pop on, the sprinkler head is in full pattern, so you don't get any bed wash or just dripping out. And then when it shuts off solid and holds back 10, 12 pounds in your line. And so you don't get any just dripping out of the end of your line on down there. So and they're very economical. And, you know, that's what the pressure regulation and the check valves that they're demanding now is it's going to go along just like that. And so we've developed a screen that's just a check that you can put under just about anything, like a bubbler or something like that. And so it'll hold back 5-6 pounds in your water line, and so you don't get all the dripping of the water. You can save all the gallons in your water line every time you shut it off. It'll stay right there.
Wow. So what? I don't think you want to tell your secrets of what you're developing for the next couple of years, but. I won't shake that out of you because that's not the right thing to do. But you guys are really creative, and I know if somebody can think of it or you think of it, I know you can develop it very quickly. And where do you want to go? I mean, where do you want to take your company further? I mean, I know you guys.
I really like development, and I really it's really rewarding when a product hits the market and does well. And so that's fun. And so as long as it isn't a real big burden to go to work, and the governor doesn't tax us to death, so we can stay here. And I remember my dad; he stayed in his office until he was 86. You know, so why not? go to work and do something else.
Yeah, I don't know a whole lot of people except for you and your brother and Rizzle who just love to get up every day and be creative and put something in the market that there's a need for to fulfill that void. And I congratulate both of you for being in the Green Industry Hall of Fame and for all the things that you've done. I love working with you guys and the projects and things that we've done, and I want to continue to do that. And for anybody who's listening in, if you live in the Riverside County or near Corona, stop by their place. It's called Henderson Brothers, and it's an incredible little place. You can find anything you want, and you need some techie information, these guys are the guys to give it to. They know it all. They've been there. They've done it.
Yeah, listen, Rob, let me add something to that. You know, my experience in the industry with the Henderson Brothers is that they've always been supported their product really well, right? They, you know, as my experience has told me over the years, if there's an issue, if there's something you need help with out in the field, Dave and Don have always been there in a support facility. And I think that bodes well for Henderson Brothers and the company. I know that I've seen it and experienced myself. In the past years, and I suppose it's safe to say that's still the modus operandi for you guys, right?
Absolutely, that's a pretty important part of the business. You have to support your products, and otherwise, it's not going to go very far.
Yeah, I think the relations are important. Well, guys, we thank you very much for taking the time and coming on our show. And again, we do appreciate it. I'm going to see you on Saturday. You didn't know that, because I'm going to watch the show that you showed us. Guys on it. So remind everybody to do that. Congratulations. Staying with Chris, and we'll see you on TV as well.
Thank you, Roger. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Appreciate the chance to talk to you.
Appreciate
awesome.
It. You guys
thanks,
have a good
thanks for calling and talking to us tonight. Hey, or just remind our listeners one more time, Rob, if I can.
Yes, please.
Yeah, just so rather than channel 2, it's just it may be another channel someplace else, but it's essentially, take channel 9 here in California. It's KLCS on PBS television, And for those of you who can watch it on Facebook, just go to facebook.com/singscreen. Again, 9 o'clock Saturday, November 7th, a.m., 9 o'clock a.m. And also on YouTube Live, 9 a.m. Saturday, November 7th at youtube.com/singscreen as well.
Great. And the thing that Chris and I want to tell all our listeners around the world is please keep our planet blue. Great. Good night, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. Have a great week and stay safe from COVID.
KCAA Loma Linda, 1050 AM, 106.5 FM, and now 102.3 FM.
AP News, I'm Jackie Quinn. While votes are still being counted across the nation and in key political battleground states,